Hey everybody, it's Jo Parra, founder of the Ladies Waving Dog Group. Are you feeling stuck with your gun dog training? Trust me, you're not alone, and that's exactly why you need to be here. Every week, we're bringing you the best tips and hacks to make training your gun dog easy peasy. We'll keep it straightforward, no fuss, just actionable guidance that you can put straight to use. So let's get started. Hello and welcome to another episode of Found It, Fetched It. This week, Emma Liddell and I are going to be speaking all about Beyond Pink, unraveling the pressure of being female. International Women's Day is today. I hope you enjoy joining us as we go through what happens and what women feel within the dog training community and outside in life. Emma, you were the inspiration behind today's podcast. Let's start by talking about what inspired you to want to cover this topic.
So I think International Women's Day is always a really interesting kind of event, and people look at it in all sorts of different ways, celebrating the amazing things women have done, looking at where we've come in society as women, about having our voices heard, about feeling valued and important, and also kind of sometimes thinking about where we need to go. And that's great and that's fantastic. And I think the thing that I wanted to really explore today is how that relates to us as women, and then how that relates to us as women when we're then fostering a relationship with our dog. So when I was thinking about this, I actually thought back to the Barbie movie, which is obviously, she's a feminist icon in her own way, depending on what your opinion is of her. And there is a monologue in that movie, which is really an emotional one. And there's just one paragraph in there that for me sums up sometimes that inner turmoil that we have as women, those pressures that we experience. And I think certainly off the back of some of the comments that I read about yesterday when we did the webinar, that we still have that today. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge it, we explore it, and kind of see what we can do to better support ourselves and each other with it. So I'm just going to read that paragraph, if that's okay. It's just very, very short. So it says here, you have to never get old, never be rude, never show off, but never be selfish, never fall down, never fail, never show fear, and never get out of line. It's just too hard and it's too contradictory, and nobody gives you a medal or says thank you. And it turns out, in fact, you're not, that not only are you doing everything wrong, but also everything is your fault. And I think that absolutely sums up sometimes this knot that we get into, where it's like, I can never ever show any sign of vulnerability or weakness. And even when I do that, I don't feel like I get thanks for it. And I do feel like somehow I'm still going away blaming myself that I'm not doing enough.
Yeah, and I can absolutely relate to that. Like, I grew up on a small holding, and my dad was very much a traditional man, shall we say. My brother could drive a truck by the time he was 11, like drive a 4x4, drive a tractor. I knew how to make a really nice cup of tea, which I made sure I didn't know how to make a nice cup of tea, that he wouldn't ask me. But that was like how he saw it. Like, I don't think he did it with any malice in him, but he literally saw it as we had very too much different roles. I've got a podcast coming up with my brother where we're talking about how my brother, as a youngster, was out with my dad with working dogs all the time. Like, my dad, again, he used to go out rabbiting, he used to take my brother to go shooting, all those things that my brother got to do with my dad, but my dad just didn't see me in that role. So even from a small age, I had to not play a role, because I don't think that was the case, but I was very aware that we were treated very, very differently. So coming back into the gun dog space with dad, when he, he was the one encouraging me to come out. He was the one saying, come do this, it will make you feel better, it will get you back outdoors. He wanted that for me. I was very conscious. I was in a male-dominated environment with my dad, who I didn't know what he would expect of me, but I pretty much sort of decided he would expect me to act like my brother.
I agree. And it's such an interesting journey that we go through. You know, as you were talking, I was reflecting on my childhood, and I've got an older brother. So there was again this, and I don't think it was deliberate. I think it was absolutely unconscious. And I think it's certainly a sign of the times. that, you know, I was given dolls and I would do this and I would do that, and my brother would play with Meccano. And although absolutely there was swap over that and my parents were absolutely fine, it wasn't like, that's not your toy. It was almost an unwritten assumption that I would go into potentially a more feminine career and compared to my brother, which was really interesting. So when I went to university, I actually, during my summertime, worked as a harbour patrol officer. So driving powerboats, which is, again, a sailing, kind of quite a masculine dominated environment. And I remember taking my dad out one day on this powerboat, and you could see it was almost a surprise that his daughter, I was, I don't know, 20 at the time, was manhandling this really big bit of kit, which had a really big outboard on the back. And it was like this disjoint, this disconnect in his brain of like, oh, but that's my 20-year-old daughter. And I think we need to move away from that. And luckily, you know, I'm very grateful. My family have moved with the times and they're very different. But almost we can self-induce that and go, well, actually, should I be doing that? Should I be doing that thing? Because actually that's a male-dominated area, and we need to move away from that. We absolutely do.
Why do you think it is that the Barbie monologue like strikes a chord with so many women?
I think it's just really authentic. It's so authentic because, and when I look at it, the amount of pressure we have to make these huge decisions in such a short space of time in our life, and part of that's biological, and we knew it was going to be an emotional podcast, so I'm like, let's go there, is the idea that somehow between the ages of probably like 19 and 45, I've got to potentially meet a partner, if that's what I'm looking for, find the right partner, potentially have children because I've got a biological clock ticking. I also potentially have to look at what I want to do with my career, find my dream job, find my dream man, have a child, if that's what works for you. And I think, again, we have to move away from the idea that that, but in such a short period of time. And that is a huge amount of pressure. And then we have the additional pressures of like, I have to be developing my career, but I also have to be a fantastic mum, and I have to hand sew a costume for World Book Day, and I have to feed them organic food day in and day out, and I've also got to keep a clean and tidy house. And there are statistics that show, even though women are back at work, a lot of them work full time because they, you know, or they work part time, the majority of the housework still sits with them and the majority of the childcare. So the fact is, these pressures are real on us. They are 100% real. And that's such a hard thing to kind of have this unwritten pressure. And then also try and find time to do something you love, like have a dog and train it.
And I think it's the pressure of all that, like, everyday stuff that we then unconsciously transfer into our dog training. Because if it's not going well, like, for those of you who know me, know my story, know my dogs, you know that Rex is good as gold and Ella has her days, shall we say, right? And then if I'm out with him, he makes it fun. But if I'm going out and I'm training Ella first, I almost, not mean to, but I bring the pressure of the day to think, oh, you are going to mess me around. You are going to take more time than I want you to take, which means that I'm going to take longer before I have to go back to running the business, doing whatever, you know, looking after the house, looking after this. And don't get me wrong, my family, Matt is great, he inputs, Meg is great, she inputs. But you are right, as women, we tend to go, yeah, but the responsibility lies with me. So all those pressures, they sort of intermingle with our dog training, whether we want them to or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, what I realised is, it was a phrase that I used only a couple of weeks ago and I stopped and was like, oh, that's interesting, is someone was saying something to me and they were like, Emma, just have patience. And I turned around and went, I don't have time to be patient. And I thought, oh, hello, that's quite a big thing to admit. Like, I don't have the time to be patient because I've got so much going on. And I thought, okay, if I don't even have the time to be patient with myself to be able to look after myself, where on earth am I going to find, and we know it takes such an inner grit when every part of us is frustrated with our dog, to go, it's fine, I'm just going to work with the dog in front of me, it's going to be okay. So if I don't even have patience with me, how on earth am I going to have patience with this little thing that's sitting in front of me? If it's my dog, a lumbering big thing going, I don't understand, like, I don't understand, whatever you're telling me, I don't get it. And I'm kind of going, yes, but you just have to. And he's, I don't get it. So we have this kind of battle straight away. And I know it's something we touch on so much about most of us. And I say most of us, I'm going to generalize because I feel like I'm going to speak on behalf of us, but most of you will probably go, yep. I often feel like I'm working against my dog and not with my dog. And that's sometimes how I feel about life. I feel like I'm working against life rather than with it. And that can be such a hard, draining, exhausting place to come from day in, day out. And I think no wonder. And then we go, on top of all of that, so society pressures, we do have hormones. And quite frankly, and I'll speak very openly about this, I think it's a miracle. If you look at our hormonal fluctuations when we're younger, when we go through our normal menstrual cycle, and then when we go through menopause, the sheer fact that we actually manage to keep it together mentally for about 3 days out of the month, I think is a miracle, let alone hold down a job, raise a child, train our dog, and all of those other things. So we have to factor in all of that, plus hormonally what's going on for us, and then have a little bit more compassion.
And you are right. You know, you like you said that, and I obviously I'm on mute when we're doing the podcast, but I burst out laughing when you said, I don't have time to be patient. Because as I'm getting to that age when I'm probably about to start the menopause, whether I like it or not, my patience is getting shorter and shorter. And sometimes I look, you know, my dogs are 5 and 7. And sometimes I think, oh, should I breed Ella? She's the last dog that was bred by me and dad. Should I have a pup out of her to keep that line going? You worked incredibly hard. And then I think, do I have the patience for a pup? So when we're on the call, like we were last night, we were talking about calm in the house. I'm already conscious. This pup isn't even born. And I'm like, do I have the headspace for something that's not going to chill in the house? And I felt for a lot of the ladies and men we were talking to last night, because the fact is we are overwhelmed, but we are overwhelmed with no end line, no end date. It's not like, can you just be overwhelmed until July the 14th, please? It's like, can you be overwhelmed till your dog decides it actually understands and wants to do what you want it to do?
Yeah. And that's so difficult. And again, it comes to that where it almost feels combative. You against the dog, you against your body. For a lot of us hormonally, sometimes we feel like we're against our own bodies. Us against society, the world. And that's such a hard place to come from. And then this concept that we put on ourselves, and I think this is something for me that I feel very powerfully and very strongly about, that we then have to be strong. We can never show we're affected by it. We have to just put this face on. No, I'm absolutely fine. When actually, and I think about the group, when we share our vulnerabilities, actually that comes from a place of strength for me. Pretending you're fine, that's just denial. It's not helpful. Coming from vulnerability, we're going, do you know what? I'm really struggling with this right now. And I'm feeling really low and I'm feeling really demoralized or upset or whatever else, but I'm still going to work with this and I'm going to work with it, not against it. That level of vulnerability, A, brings us together as a group of women completely, because it's that, it's our little scars, if we have to be really brutal about it, that make the other person go, oh my God, me too. Exactly like Joe when you laughed then, because you were like, yeah, me too. And that's what brings us together. That's what connects us. Us all pretending that we are Mary Poppins of the gun dog world does not bring us together. It brings us further apart. And it's hard enough raising a puppy. It's hard enough raising a dog. Hard enough, quite frankly, being a woman and functioning in society. Working with each other is the way we're going to get through it.
I think like you absolutely hit the nail on the head there when you said the breakthrough, I think, for me, absolutely was the point when you went, or when I went, I can't do this yet, and I'm going to have to give myself time to learn this. Because I think for a long time, like you said, I went into Korea, I had 3 children, you know, I was very, very driven, like, I know it's one of my incredibly most important values to provide for my family. When I went into my first operation, one of my biggest thoughts, like literally laying there the night before they've told me they're cutting my head open, was thinking, who will provide? Now, the reality is, me and my mum have talked about this many times, but she said, the family around, if something ever happened to you, the family around you would provide for those children. But in my head, it was like driving me, and it still does today. Like if you said, well, what's the values, what's the thing that puts you through it, is knowing my family, if anything happened to me, would be okay. But also, I think as well, the group definitely has taught me to be able to say those things and to also be able to step back from those things, not just in my personal, like real life, but also in my dog life, to be able to look at the dogs and say, okay, you haven't got this yet, and you may never get this, Ella, but the pressure I'm putting on myself and you to be perfect is actually destroying our relationship. Whereas if I just accept that you're going to take time and it's not all going to be easy, I can take the pressure off myself. I don't feel so overwhelmed. I can step back and go, okay, I can actually enjoy this for what it is now, rather than this idea of perfection.
Yeah. And I think a really good question to ask yourself for me before you get out of dog training is, are you training today because you should train your dog, or are you training your dog because you can? And by can, that's about capacity. Like, do I have the emotional, physical and mental capacity to train my dog today? If the answer is yes, get that lead and get out there with your dog. If the answer is no, the outcome is going to be a really difficult one. And it's going to be really confusing for the dog, because the day before I might be in a really good place and I'm really compassionate with my dog and I'm working on heel work and I'm taking time, and the dog's like, oh, this is good, I'm building up a relationship. And the next day I'm looking at my dog, my facial recognition is different, I may be tugging the dog around on a lead, which actually isn't comfortable for me or isn't comfortable for the dog. I leave feeling uncomfortable that I've done that. Not that I'm hurting my dog, but I'm more abrupt. And my dog's confused, because it's like, but yesterday you had this level of compassion with me, and today you're angry. Now, any dog can read facial expressions. They're brilliantly well trained to be able to do that with humans. And they're going to be confused. I don't know what you're asking of me. Like, I don't, like, yesterday I was okay and I was trying my best and that was good. Now I'm trying my best and you're not happy with me. And I think that rupture in a relationship, and I know I've touched on it, I'm going to keep saying it, is it's working with the dog and not against the dog. It's almost like I say to people, right, people come to me in private practice and say, I'm stressed and I'm not sleeping and I'm not, and I'm like, okay, where are you working with your body, not against your body? And they go, well, what do you mean? And I'm like, okay, well, if your body is tired, what are you doing to work with your body? Oh, it's just drinking another cup of coffee, not good. No, it's not. So when we start working, and that's where that kind of idea of compassion and surrender and acceptance that we are all human and we aren't perfect and we can't do it all, that's where that comes in. And when you go through that and you go like, I'm tired of fighting with you, beautiful dog, or pain in the bum dog. I'm tired of fighting with you, body. I can't sort out your hormones. I can't make you not sleep and all those other, I need to work with you. That's when actually our body, our dog, everything else goes, oh, okay, like we're a team. I didn't realize we were a team. I thought we'd have to just argue with each other until eventually we just hit a brick wall. Like, oh, we're a team. Okay, let's see what we can do. And that's when things like our body, our mental health, our dogs, those relationships start flourishing.
It's all relationships, isn't it? Like, it's even like our relationship with our children, our relationship with our friends, our family. It is that, like, how do we connect and go in the same way? I think for a lot of us, like, you just made me laugh. You were like, you know, that conversation, sort of like your body going, could you just close your eyes for 2 minutes, please? That would really be helpful. Like, we're just like literally trying to rack up these, I don't know, they're invisible ticks almost in my head, where I'm like, done that. And I see myself doing it every day. And I'm a really, really busy day in the computer. And I'm doing stuff. And I'm like, I'll upload that. While that's uploading, I'm going to put the next load of washing on. And when the next load of washing is on and that's finished uploading, I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to get that loaded out of the tumble dryer and I'm going to put the dishwasher on. And I'm like, I'm trying. I force myself to be able to tick off all these expectations. And then I get to the end of the day and I am so exhausted. I'm like, oh my God, tomorrow, Joe, you have to be better. And I almost hear my body at 12 o'clock when I'm watching some random thing to decompress say to me, you have to be better. And every morning I get up and I think, oh, I'm going to be better. But the foolish thing I think our bodies trick us into, and it comes back to our dog training, is the next morning we tend to get up feeling a bit better because we've had whatever sleep we've had, and we started again. And we like that with our dogs. We learn the lesson by the end of this session with our dog, potentially. And then potentially we start the next session back on square one.
Yeah. And I think a really nice way of checking in with that, either personally or with your dogs, is, okay, you've done that, but at what cost? Like, you've got your dog doing that, but at what cost? Has it helped your relationship or has it hurt your relationship? You know, yeah, you've got through your to-do list. And I, Joe, you and I are very similar. We've got chronic to-do lists. I do mark whether I've achieved stuff that day by that to-do list. I am not brilliant in that. And I've got to check in with myself. Okay, you've done that, Emma, but at what cost? At what cost? Your health, your sleep, your relationships with friends or family members, your relationship with your dog. Like, what is it? At what cost? And sometimes the cost isn't one. It's kind of, well, actually, you know, I've had a really nice day and hasn't really cost me anything apart from my time, but I feel good and I feel energized. But the times that we're really pushing ourselves, or we feel that pressure either from society or our inner pressure to be Emma Poppins, as I call it, laugh, practically perfect in every way, that side of it, at what cost? And if the cost is a negative one, should I really be doing that? And that's sometimes quite a sombering. And I remember, so I say it to my clients, I'm like, that's great, but at what cost? And they kind of look at me and go, all right, yeah. Yeah, I see where you're coming from there.
They say that, like, learning a new skill is quite empowering, don't they? To everyone, not just women. And, like, for those of you who know me, you know that I go to Sugarcraft, and I love Sugarcraft, and I do feel it empowering. I managed to switch off. I don't call it Sugarcraft. I call it art therapy, because for that, you know, 2 hours, can't think about my phone, can't think about work, can't think about my health. I just think about whatever random little model I'm making that day. But then when it comes to dog training, I don't know if it is as empowering, because it is as difficult, because there's two minds trying to work as one.
Yeah. And I think that's it. You know, when you're doing your Sugarcraft, and I've seen your Sugarcraft, it's beautiful. The only person you're working with is you, your dexterity, and whatever you're working with, kind of like the sugar paste, etc. We forget on the end of that lead, and as you know, I refer to mine as my little goblin child, is a whole little creature with its own wants and needs and demands and experiences, and whether he's rolled out the right side of his crate that morning, or whether he's hungry or not hungry, or whether he's slept well, or maybe he hasn't slept well, or maybe he's got some raging hormones or something else is going on. Maybe he's a little bit in pain. We don't know. He's got his own agenda. And trying to find a time where you can reconnect and go, I get you've got your agenda. I've got mine. I've got all of the same stuff going on as you. What can we do together that we can share? And I think that's a really key part of it, around training is supposed to be fun. Now, we know that often training doesn't feel fun. Certainly heel work is a really good example. I don't think I've ever loved doing heel work with my dog. But it is supposed to have an element of fun. The reason we got these dogs is because we love them. The reason we've got these dogs is we want to bond with them. The reason we've got these dogs is we want to have a partnership with them. We want to feel like we are working together. And every single woman that I've ever spoken to, when I talk about, like, what's your best moment when you've worked your dogs, and they might talk about some insane retrieve or whatever's happened, it's because they've been listening. The dog's been listening. You've been reading the dog. We forget we have to listen to our dogs as well. You've been reading the dog, and you have worked in partnership. And that, for me, most women, myself included, when that happens, I could cry. I could absolutely cry, because for that moment, we're a team. We're in sync. We've both got the same aim. We've both got the same goal. We've both got that same moment. And that's incredibly special. And that's why we have dogs, and that's why we want to work them. But the rest of it, we forget that we lose that bond. We lose that kind of joint aim. And it becomes like, I've got to do heel work with you. I've got to do this with you. I've then got to do, no. You don't have to, you want to, because you want to have this bond with your dog.
When I go into Sugarcraft on Friday morning, Kate would laugh with this, but it's very, very true. If any member of her class walks in, Kay's our instructor, and looks at all overwhelmed or flustered, and, you know, you can see in people's body language, when they're taking their coats off, you could tell somebody's flustered. She will come up to them and she'll say, sit down, don't touch anything. would you like tea and toast? And like, it's almost like it makes you smile if you're not the person, and it makes you smile if you are the person. But basically, what she's saying is, stay the F away from the icing until you calm down, because you're not going to make anything of any value when you are raging. And sometimes I sort of wish I have a K when you go out with the dogs, because it is the same mindset. You need to sometimes say, well, hold on, before I take that dog anyway, maybe I'll have a cup of tea and some toast and just steady the mindset before I try to go and do something that is going to be complex.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's key when working with kind of any animal at all, around that idea. They pick up on it. We pick up on it. It's such a difficult thing. We talk about kind of the lead being an umbilical cord between us and our dogs. And I don't think that could be, you know, dogs have such an insane ability to sense the slightest change. That's why we've got so many emotional support dogs. We have dogs that can sense when someone's going to have a fit and things like that. They can detect the smallest change, probably more than we can. The amount of people that will say, my dog knew I was pregnant before I knew I was pregnant. So they can detect those hormonal changes, even when we don't even notice we've got them. So can you imagine what they can detect when I'm raging about something, or I'm feeling really hurt, or I'm feeling really sad? And we have to understand that and work with that. That is not us being somehow failing as women. And I really want to move away from this idea, this concept, especially when we talk about hormones, as women's hormones just being like, oh, they're just being hormonal. Yeah, I'm being hormonal because I have hormones. They are chemicals in my body that make me feel things. It's not in my head. It is a physical thing that happens to me, and I feel stuff as a result. I don't ever think that that should be minimized for us, because actually, it's not just something that we just decide to experience. Most of us would not like those hormonal fluctuations if we could avoid it. So we've got to navigate that. We've got to navigate that and understand that our dogs potentially are also going, oh, this is different. What's going on here?
I should say you girls, it's International Women's Day, but you have been a huge pivotal part, especially since Dad passed, in being my support and combating the pressure of that I feel as a female. Because there are so many times, especially when I was going through a very much a grieving period, where I could have like literally given the dogs up, as much as they gave me a sense of peace in my mind. At that point, they were also a huge reminder of what I'd lost. So it was a real difficult time for me. It was like, do I love them, or do I want nothing more to do with them? It was incredibly difficult. But the community kept me going, talking to you guys, talking to our members. And I think I was pretty open about how I was feeling. And the whole of the society were incredibly, incredibly supportive. Do you think that like having that supportive community is really not essential, but it is really important to get through this when you're training your dog, having other people who understand what you're facing?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And I've got a group of friends, some I've met through the LWDG, some I haven't, but are now members and all sorts of things like that. And I refer to them as like my country wives. Because they are my family, because they get it. They absolutely get it. And I'm very lucky that when I found field sports and when I started working with women in field sports, I came into field sports, for some of you know, via falconry. I was very, very lucky that I had some fantastically supportive women falconers and female dog handlers that I could, I say aspire to, but understand that they had found their way in the world, and therefore I could also. It was very aspirational for me to do that. And I am very grateful that there has been a number of wonderful men that have been very open and inclusive. I remember I'd had my hawk for maybe about 2 years, and my falconry mentor, who sadly passed away about 2 years ago, he said to me one day, he's like, you do know, you're a really good falconer, but you know what you're doing. And I kind of stood there and looked at him and was like, it felt so nice to have someone recognize that as a female, that actually I could do this. I did know what I was doing. And that actually, that was my journey in that. So the support that I've had from women, where I have laughed, cried, rolled my eyes at, gone, you'll never guess what I've done today. You'll never guess what my dog did. You'll never guess how training went. So not only the support that I've had from women who are in it with me, but the aspirational women that I see that are either out trialing or are doing amazing things with their dogs. And some of those are far within our group. We've got some wonderfully aspirational women that you see do stuff and you think, Christ, that's amazing. Not only do you feel part of a team, but you also have people that you can kind of look up to and go, do you know what, if you can do that, there's nothing that's stopping me doing that as well. And actually, I can even talk to you about how you got there. And we know that there are still sometimes issues in male-dominated areas of field sports. From my experience, and I can only talk from my experience, it is getting better. And I know I've spoken about doing my first season as a lady gun and having nothing but support from, and I was the only lady gun there, nothing but support from the men, which was fantastic. But I know that's not been everyone's experience. I've spoken to female dog handlers where dog trainers have said to them, you know, a woman shouldn't be handling this dog, this should go to a male owner, or what's a little woman like you manhandling a dog like that? We need to move away from that. And I would say, if that's been your experience, get another trainer, speak to another woman that will give you the support and go, no, that's not right. But yeah, certainly a tribe of women that I can talk to, my group of country wives and the LWDG, and then the aspirational women that supported me when I still felt very fragile and very new and very vulnerable to any commentary from anybody. I think that's vital for us.
Yeah, because you talk about like falconry and shooting. You didn't come from that background at all, did you? It's not like you were born to this world.
No, not at all. So I come from a family, my dad and my brother are engineers. My mum does archery, which actually I got her into. There's no farming background, there's no agricultural background, there's no field sports background at all in my family. In fact, they probably think I was a bit of a left turn at the traffic lights when I said, oh, birds of prey, that's a great idea. There was no pathway into it for me at all. And it was only through talking to people, having support from people, encouragement from people, male and female, that allowed those pathways to open up to me. And I look back now, and I only came into field sports probably maybe 8 years ago now. I only got my kind of shotguns about 6 years ago. Only got my first proper working dog about 3 years ago. And to sit here now as kind of the mindset coach for a fantastic group of women, where I get the opportunity to hopefully encourage and connect, break down those blocks that women might have, I think my role is absolutely a privilege to have that voice in field sports. I think it's absolutely fantastic and I love every moment of it.
What do you think we can do? Because like both of us have just shared our stories there of where if it hadn't been for other women saying, don't give up, you can do this, don't give up, you can do this. And we are definitely, you know, we've needed someone to be that voice for us when we've been down. And we've been that voice without doubt for other women when they felt down. What do you think we can do to keep on encouraging that supportive environment for women to keep on sharing, to not be scared to say, you know, like from the podcast we did the other day, I live in the middle of city centre, I do training in my shorts, I don't have a dummy yet, I've only got a tennis ball, you know, how do we keep on fostering that? It is International Women's Day. How do we really make sure that today of all days, as we do every day, we make a difference to another woman's life?
I think it's about having conversations. It's about having conversations and having the courage as women to share our stories like we just have that vulnerability and go, yeah, I was scared. Yes, I cried. Yes, I didn't think I could do it. Yes, I didn't think I fitted in. The more we share that, that's what connects us. It isn't about us being successful and great at what we do and going, look at this amazing thing. It's about going, I was really scared about this and I didn't know if I could fit in and I still gave it a go. And actually, we need to be aspirational to other women. We're in the position where we can do that now. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely don't always have the confidence. I know I might come across like that, but you know, on this Saturday, I'm going to be taking Scout out for a simulated shoot day. I'm nervous about that. I haven't done a huge amount of training with him for a little while. I'm nervous about what he's going to be like around that, you know, around that situation. But I can be honest with you about that. I can hopefully, some of you now listening will be going, oh, okay. Like, it's okay to be scared. It's okay to be nervous about that. So having those conversations, being really authentic with each other. And the other bit I would say, field sports is a controversial area that we care about. Get another woman into it. And not even about getting them into it and make them love it. Just expose them to it in the nicest of way. Give them the opportunity. Get them out of a dummy. One of your friends that maybe hasn't even thought about it. The amount of women that I've spoken to that I've either tried to take out clay sheeting or have been too nervous about taking their dog out or getting a dummy or break down those barriers. We've had to fight really hard, and the women before us have had to fight even harder. And the women before that have had to fight even harder to break down those barriers. It's our duty to make it as easy as possible for the women that come after us. That's the great thing about being part of this tribe and this sisterhood, is we get to break down those barriers. And then hopefully people in the generations beneath us, they won't face the stuff that we did.
It's really like, I love our group for so many reasons, but I created the group because I was scared to be in the men's group. I would see people write something like, my dog didn't do a 50-foot retrieve, you know, we had only did a 30-foot, what can I do? And they would be like slated, smash. It was like, get out the popcorn, here we go. And I was so petrified. I thought, how on Lord's earth can I write in there, like, how do I put on a slip lead properly? Like, how could you do it? And that's why I created it. And when there was just like five of us in there or eight of us in there, it was incredibly helpful. And now there's 8,000, this still is incredibly helpful, just on a bigger scale. But I really think as well, that the part of that journey for many of our women is, some of them, lots of them, come in with a dog that will never go to an estate. It will never go out hunting another animal. It will never work with cold game. But the owner will love everything up until the point where that would potentially happen. So all the dummy training, all the working tests, all the meetups, all that stuff that we do. Because if you think about it, the Ladies Working Dog Group never sees anything at all dead. Like, literally, we don't. That's not where we go. Our members may go do those things and then come back to our hub, shall we say. But as a group, we accept everyone, don't we? And we talk about this, whether you're vegetarian, whether you're vegan, whether you hunt, whether you're anti-hunt. It doesn't make a difference. It's about training the dog in front of you.
Yeah. And if we think about that, it's a really, really good example. And I know there were some questions yesterday about, if I don't want to take my dog on a shoot, am I not going to be? Absolutely, you're going to be included. It doesn't matter what age your dog is. It doesn't matter what your belief system around shooting field sports is. If you want to go down that route, we'll support you into that. If you don't, that's fine. But the thing that I was thinking about as you were talking is, okay, so I do, that is kind of where I want my journey with my dog to go. But how often does my dog touch either a bird, cold game, or whatever, compared to a dummy? Like, compared to what we practice with, it's dummies, isn't it? That's what we do. The majority of our training does not involve any form of game. And that's great, because what it means is other people who never are even interested in that whole community can have a really well-trained dog that has a purpose. And that, for me, and I know we've discussed this before, is part of the Ladies Working Dog Group. It's about giving the dog a purpose, and a purpose that is comfortable for you. Now, your purpose might just be a really well-trained dog. Great. Fantastic. We need more of those in the world. Well-trained dogs are very, very welcome. For some people, that might be, I want a really well-trained dog that then also man trails, or that also does agility, or that also is a gun dog, whatever that might work. And I know we've touched on, like, what is a gun dog before, but what we want is, we want dogs with a purpose. That's the point of the Ladies Working Dog Group. That's the point of working. Work is a purpose. And whatever that purpose is for you and your dogs, we want to support you with that.
It's really interesting as you say, because, like, I came into this, my first day was on an estate with pheasants, like, literally. And because I'd grown up on a small holding, And we'd had our own like sheep and lambs and chickens and turkeys. And, you know, I'd grown up in that. I wasn't shocked when they were shot. I wasn't shocked to see a dead bird. But that since my dad has passed, you know this, Em, you're my friend, I found it incredibly hard to step foot on an estate, not because of what goes on an estate, but I don't know if I want to be there without my father. It's like, it was like our thing, if that makes sense. But that hasn't taken from me. It hasn't affected in any way, in fact, my love for training. So when I'm out with a dummy, it can be just me and the dogs, and I have just as much fun, me, Rex, Ella, two dummies, three balls on my Todd, literally as I ever did out on an estate. And it's that fluctuation, isn't it? It's like you may go into something and then you may come back out of it, and then you might try something else and come back into it. And I think as women, we need to say it's okay to change your mind. It's okay to want to see where that path takes you. It's okay to only do this much today. It's okay to do 10 tomorrow. We've got to be a little bit more accepting around the fact that we don't have to have everything defined.
Yeah, and we can change our minds, and that changes over time. So, for example, a lot of you know that I'm vegetarian, and that's something that I think is, I was really hesitant about talking about that first of all in the Ladies Working Dog Group, but now I kind of like celebrating because it shows we can be different and together. So I'm vegetarian. I used to have pet rats as a really, really good example. And then X years later, when I had a bird of prey, I had to deal with dead rats because that's what my bird ate. So I'd gone from a very similar pet rat that I'd cuddled and loved for 2-3 years of its life to then dealing with processing a frozen one, thawing it out, getting it ready for my bird of prey to eat for its dinner. That's my evolution through that. And that's okay that I've changed my mind. That's okay that I've changed where I sit with that. That actually, if someone had said to me when I was 7 years old, would I be able to do that? I'd have been in floods of tears. I can do that now because I understand my bird needs to eat. And if I can't do that, I probably shouldn't own a bird of prey. You know, it's very different with our dogs. Our dogs don't have to go and pick up pheasants. With a bird of prey, they do need to eat something. Carrots don't work very well. But with our dogs, we can work as far as we feel comfortable with that dog. And as a group, as long as the dog has a purpose, we're supportive of that. And whether that purpose is I want it to be able to chill out while I'm at the pub, and when I go for a walk, I want to have fun with my dog and do some retrieves and have it off lead and do fun stuff and get it in and out of the water and all that stuff. And that's my dog's purpose. Brilliant. Why would we not support you with that? Right through to I want to have my first ever field trial champion, or I want to take my dog to crap. Why would we not support you with that? It's okay to be different, but still be part of the same group because we're here to support you and what you want out of your dog. We're not going to tell you what you need to get out of your dog.
To wrap this podcast up, because me and you can talk forever, like with the experts when we're in dog deck, we could talk forever. We could be there forever. How do you think, like with your Barbie monologue that we started with, how do you feel that we help people with that? How do we make it easier to deal with societal norms, societal pressures?
I think we need to celebrate the imperfect. And if I could get an epidemic of women who are listening to this, either on Facebook right now or listening to the podcast over the coming weeks, to write something in our group that they are going to celebrate that they're imperfect at, I think that would be fantastic. We need to celebrate our imperfections. I'm never going to be perfect. And do you know what makes me relatable? The fact I'm not perfect. So the more we can break those societal norms by encouraging other people to do the things that they want to do and that feel right for them, by breaking down this idea that a working dog has to be a gun dog in the field with a dead thing in its mouth. It absolutely doesn't. Whether it's even us as women, some of us wanted to have children. Some of us wanted to have children and couldn't have children. Some of us chose not to have children. Some of us chose to get married. Some of us chose not to. Some of us are more than happy being on our own. We need to break out the idea of what a stereotype of a woman is, what our role is, what we should do and what we should achieve. Actually, the best thing about being a woman is about encouraging ourselves and encouraging other women to be themselves.
fabulous as always. For those listening on the podcast, I hope you have thoroughly enjoyed. I hope you are having a fabulous International Women's Day. Gentlemen, if you've been listening, I hope this has helped you understand what can sometimes seem quite irrational. There is actual rationality behind it. And I do feel, I've got to be honest, we have this International Women's Day. I don't know, is there an International Men's Day? Because I do think in some ways, men have their own pressures to deal with and their own stereotypes to live up to and their own emotions to control and all those things in their own right. And just as we should be accepted for all our hormones or imperfections, they should be accepted for theirs as well. We maybe need to break down everyone's stereotype and just accept the person who is in front of us. Big thank you to Em, as always, for like yabbering to me. I love every second of it. Your final one key takeaway, please, for listeners to remember after listening to this.
Oh, that's a difficult one. Just remember there is incredible power in femininity and we need to embrace that.
Fabulous. I'm now going to finish the call. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for taking part. And we look forward to seeing you all very soon, either within the membership or in Crafts today. If you are here in Crafts today and it's before 11 o'clock, you can find us on the WOW stand at 11 o'clock. If it's after 11 o'clock, very sorry, we've gone shopping, which is, again, very stereotypical. But very true. I have a long list and so does my daughter. And hopefully we shall see you all next week for another episode of Bound It, Fetched It. That's it for today's episode. A massive thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to head over to the LWDG and sign up for our membership. Get access to expert-led training, a wonderfully supportive community, and the resources you need to become a confident and skilled gun dog trainer. Let's take this journey together because no woman should have to train her gun dog alone. We'll see you all next week.